Listen to health writers if you are concerned about the health of the body politic.
Last night in Georgia, a man was murdered. His name was Troy Anthony Davis. He was murdered because in Georgia, there is no such thing as a fair trial for a black man. Not when you can't afford a good lawyer. Not when the police show the witnesses your picture before they do the lineup. Not when it doesn't matter that seven of those witnesses come forward to say that they lied under oath because the police coerced them. Not when it doesn't matter that the first man who fingered Troy Davis then confessed to the crime himself. Not when it doesn't matter that jurors came forward and said if they had known then what they know now, Troy Davis would never have been convicted. Not when it doesn't matter that Troy Davis was innocent. And not when the police celebrated in riot gear outside of his execution chamber. Last night, the whole world was watching. The whole world that again and again has been lectured at by the United States about freedom and democracy. They watched as Troy Davis was strapped down on a gurney with a needle in his arm for 4 hours waiting to decide whether politicians felt like he deserved to live. There is a word for that barbarity, and it is torture. The whole world was watching while Troy Davis was killed with a drug cocktail that in many states is illegal to use to put down a dog, because in this country, we have stronger laws for the humane treatment of dogs than we do for the humane treatment of human beings who are prisoners. I think there's a reason that they took those 4 hours. It was very important to them that when the highest court of this land, the 9 unelected justices, decided that Troy Davis did not have the right to live, that that be a unanimous decision. It was important because they're sending us a message. It was important that the President of the United States did absolutely nothing, that he did not lift a finger, that he did not send the Department of Justice to investigate what were obvious violations of Troy Davis's civil rights in Georgia, that he did not even say a damn word for Troy Davis. That was sending us a message too, and a message to every black person in this country in particular, I think. And the message is, get used to it, don't expect any better, this is how things work. But Troy Davis also had a message for us yesterday. It was a very different one. On the last day of his life, he said, "There are so many more Troy Davises. This fight to end the death penalty is not won or lost through me, but through our strength to move forward and save every innocent person in captivity around the globe. We need to dismantle this unjust system, city by city, state by state, and country by country." Last night at 11:08 p.m., that should be a defining moment for our generation. 150 years ago, they executed John Brown. They took his life, but they sparked a movement for the abolition of slavery in this country. Last night, they took Troy Davis from us, so it is up to us to make sure that in taking his life, they sparked the next abolition movement in this country, this time for the abolition of the death penalty system in the United States. It's up to us to honor the memory of Troy Davis by fighting in his name until every Troy Davis in this country is free. So I will leave us with the words of the poet, Kevin Koval. "We the people know these truths to be self-evident. Rich racists run America. Today in 2011, when the country murders another black man, we begin to look for alternatives to the status quo. We must use our resources, not capital and a paid police force, but the collectivity of our mass, our bodies that can organize together. It is all we have and all we need." Troy Davis, presente. Thank you.
Good. Good evening. This is health writer Steve Blank. Today I was at a rally at the Library Mall where people, stunned by the execution of Troy Davis, gathered to show and express their outrage. That was Elizabeth Wrigley Field, a student at UW and a member of the International Socialist Organization. I took the opportunity to walk through the crowd and speak with other people who showed up for the rally.
My name is Louis Martino.
Louis, what brought you out here to this rally this evening?
The execution of Troy Davis made me feel very, upset, and I felt that the issue was very important. I felt that there was all the evidence that was against him being executed. There was the whole victims, the 7 out of 9 people recanting. And then there was the issue, there were all these issues, and I felt like, why is he being executed? I felt like there was a lack of listening by the Supreme Court and by the general. All the public was in solidarity, and there was a lack of listening by Georgia and by the Supreme Court.
Do you think that the Supreme Court should have intervened to put a stay on the execution?
I think so very much. I feel like a lot of them being Catholic and having the Pope's involvement as well, if they're not going to do it based on the Republican influence, many of them are Catholic, like Scalia and Alito, and I feel, of course, they should have done something about it. The Pope came out and said that Troy Davis should not be executed. Religious or non-religious, every religion and everyone, whether they're atheist, agnostic, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, whatever they are, there's an objection to killing innocent people, and there's an objection to the death penalty.
One more question, Louis. Do you think that the President of the United States could have taken a stand on this issue? Do you think he should have?
Of course he should have taken a stand on the issue. He himself is a Democratic candidate. He himself should stand up for this issue, for the death penalty and being against the death penalty. Of course he should have done something about it. Maybe the same thing when things happened in Wisconsin, he didn't speak about the Walker issue and the collective bargaining. It's his duty to stand up for all issues and speak his piece on them. Even if he's the leader of the general nation, he should speak for certain states as well.
Thanks for speaking with Health Writers. First, can you tell me your name?
Linda.
And Linda, where are you from?
From Hamburg, from Germany.
Do they have a death penalty in Germany?
No, we haven't.
And what do you feel about the death penalty in the United States?
Yeah, of course, I'm totally against it. It's more than inhuman, and especially I think it's always, in a lot of cases, it had something to do with racism always. So I don't know so much about it, but I think a lot of people were killed by the government. Yeah, in fact, they was not guilty for mm-hmm. that.
And what do you think about the leader of the United States, President Obama, refusing to say anything about this to try and prevent this execution from occurring?
Yeah, of course it's not good, but I don't know. I think what really is necessary is that the majority of the population in the U.S. is against us, build movement against us, do something like this here. Yeah, say we don't accept this because I don't know. In Germany, I don't trust the politicians, and I think we should not trust Obama or any other.
Well, Linda, thank you for giving us your perspective.
Yeah.
Thank you. Would you care to be interviewed?
Sure.
Okay. And tell me your name, please.
Teddy Shibaba.
Hello, Teddy. We're friends on Facebook.
Oh.
Pleased to meet you. I'm with Health Writers, and our show will be on at 7 o'clock tonight. Why are you here in this rally of outrage against the execution of Troy Davis? Are you outraged?
I am outraged by the fact that it's okay for this government to basically murder an innocent man. It's kind of similar to how it gets away with murdering tens of thousands and more people in the wars overseas. It's another form of state-sanctioned murder by the corporate-controlled government. And I think even people who are guilty should not be, capital punishment should be abolished, is my opinion, in the United States. And I think it's just, because so many people have been proven innocent by DNA evidence, it's just the fact that even one innocent person could be killed by this capital punishment, I think is an absolute wrong, and we should all fight to abolish it worldwide.
Now, the Supreme Court of the United States claims that this is out of their jurisdiction because it's in the state of Georgia. It's not a federal issue, which is very similar to what the Supreme Court of the United States said in 1886 when the Haymarket Martyrs were on trial in Chicago. They didn't get involved either. Do you think that the Supreme Court should have become involved, put a stay on this execution?
I think whatever lever of power that could have been put to use to stop this execution would have been appropriate. I think the Supreme Court, like the entire legal system, is another form of, you know, there's basically two kinds of court systems for two different kinds of people, one for the rich and powerful and one for, you know, for the rest of us. And, you know, they choose when to get involved based on whether or not it serves the interest of maintaining the order that serves, you know, big business and, you know, corporate elite. And as a socialist, I believe that, you know, this government nor any government should have any right to kill anyone.
Teddy, thanks for speaking with Health Writers. The next speaker was Dan Suarez, a teacher at MATC.
Troy Davis is dead, murdered by the state of Georgia. And murder is permanent. There's no going back from that. When you strap a man to a gurney and inject poison into his veins, there is no eraser for that. And how can we possibly justify murdering a man whose guilt is ever in doubt for a single second? Since 1973, 123 people have been sentenced to death and had their convictions overturned in light of new evidence. And we can only wonder how many were not that lucky and how many have been murdered by the state since then. But there's no way of knowing. One thing that we do know, however, is that in the United States, whether you're the victim or the perpetrator, you can be assured that if you are not white, your chances of a fair trial are slim and none. African Americans make up 12% of the U.S. population, yet they make up 42% of prisoners on death row. And although they constitute 50% of murder victims each year, 80% of the victims in death penalty cases were white, and only 14% were black. So what does that tell us? It tells us that in the eyes of the U.S. criminal justice system, if you are not white, you are not important.
First question is, how are you personally doing in this economy?
Sucks.
No one knows that.
Come on, I'm homeless. Barely got a job.
You're doing really bad, you
right.
feel. And what are your current aspirations?
Getting a job, trying to get an apartment, a car.
Oh man, I'm doing that all the time. I mean, I'm constantly online slapping out resumes, cover letters, filling out applications online, because it's pretty much almost anything you can do anymore besides doing door-to-door, pound the pavement.
So your aspirations are getting a job, getting stability, a place to stay, transportation, stuff like that, right?
Yep.
Just the basics.
Stay alive.
Not a vacation to Hawaii?
Vacation? No, I haven't had a vacation in 20-some-odd years.
Vacation in right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a vacation. We go camping every day.
Yeah. That was the voice of Brian with his friends who I interviewed in James Madison Park this week. These days, the bad economy is all over the news, but the type of reporting we get is all very abstract. It's numbers and interviews with so-called experts. During the Great Depression, Studs Terkel turned to ordinary people to find out what was happening in our country, and I think this is where the real story lies. I recently became acquainted with a man named Kelly and interviewed him in depth about his experiences in this economy. He's a veteran, unemployed, and homeless.
I guess I'd like to start by asking a few questions that I asked the guys at the park.
Okay.
About kind of like their thoughts on the economy. And I'll start by asking, how is the economy treating you these days?
Treating me? I'm out of work because of it. I'm a trained cook, and I can't find work anywhere. I've been on the internet. I've been through the internet from one state to the other, and I can't find work. I've never seen it this bad before.
So you're from Chicago. Back in Chicago, you
I'm originally from Chicago. Yeah,
you had a steady job, pretty steady wage.
Yeah, well, I lived in the southern states for about 6 years after I left the Marine Corps. And I had a lot of work down south, and then it dried up. It started down there, and then I came back here, and then within 2 years, that was gone. So it's hitting the whole country. There's nowhere to go.
And so not having a job, and the way we met is that you're homeless right now.
Yes, I'm homeless.
And it makes it even more difficult to find a job, I imagine.
Well, you don't have an address. I mean, I live in the shelter. They give you an address there, but that's 6 or 7 miles to get down there to get your mail. You got these bags in your back, and you're carrying everything you own. And 6 miles is a long walk when you got all that stuff to carry. You carry about between 40 to 50 pounds.
So I'm wondering, in the sea economy, what are your current aspirations?
Find work. Hope things get better. I've never gave this a lot of thought, but lately I've been talking to a lot of young people, and I think it's time maybe we should do a little protesting in the streets. Something's got to give.
So do you think, how optimistic are you that you will get a job?
I tell you, a month ago I was really, when I first got here, I got here in January, no, in June, I was really upbeat, looked every day. Now it's getting, days are getting longer, and I'm not looking as hard as I used to, because it's just frustrating.
So I guess I'd like to start from the beginning and learn a little bit more the background of your life. You grew up in Chicago, is that right?
Yeah, I lived there till, well, I went in the service when I was 17, but I always considered it my home till I was 33, and then I moved out.
And what kind of work did your parents do?
My father was he was a politician for about 20 years. After that, when he retired from that, he was an automobile mechanic.
And your mom, what did she do?
My mother was a homemaker till my brothers and I grew up or got it to our teens, and then she worked for, not Sears, but Montgomery Wards for quite a while. And then she was a banker. She worked as a teller for quite a few years till she retired.
And so you were just talking about going into the service. Were you drafted or you joined?
No. This was 1979. The draft was over. Vietnam was over for about 5 years. I think Vietnam ended in 1975 or 74. No, I volunteered. That was the days when the 51 hostages were captured during the...
Iran.
No, was it Iran? Yeah. I don't remember. I think you're right. But they were captured, and a lot of us joined because of that.
I see. And so what did you do in the military? You got trained from there?
Yeah, I did my 13 weeks, and then I did a little special stuff. I spent 4.5 years in Central America fighting a drug war. I really can't talk too much about that.
Okay. So how long did you spend in the military?
10 years.
Wow.
I was going to put 20 years in, and then I dealt with one Ronald Reagan and one Republican, and I wasn't going to deal with another one. And then George Bush got in, I got out.
So what year did you get out then?
1989.
And what did you do from there?
Well, kind of floated around the country for a while, get one better job from the other. I went back to school and became a cook, or better cook. And then I got married at 33. Lived in a little town called Rib Lake, Wisconsin, up north, and I stayed there for about 8 years, and then my wife and I split and got a divorce, and then I went down south for quite a while.
I see. What kind of jobs did you do?
Well, let's see. I've been was a carpenter. Boy, so many. Bartender, bouncer. I drilled for water. When I was down in Florida, I was on a fishing boat for shrimp. A cook. I've been a head cook. A sous chef. I know it was more than that. I can't remember.
What was your favorite job, and which was your least favorite job?
My favorite job it's always been cooking, and my least favorite job, I was custodian for quite a few years, and then I lived in Chicago, and I got out of service. Hated it.
Why is that?
Boring. You do the same thing. You could tell what time it was by what room you were in.
Can you explain how you came to Madison and why?
Yeah, I was living in Wausau, Wisconsin, and I knew I was going to lose my apartment. I was getting thrown out because I couldn't find work there either. So I went to Catholic Charities because I heard about it.
And can you explain how that happened?
Well, I was working for the Salvation Army, and I got laid off there because they were cutting benefits there, too. Everybody's losing funding, you know. So then I was going to a church, and a woman offered me a job as a custodian at the local high school. And I worked there, and then all the stuff from Walker happened, and they laid everybody off that just got hired. I was in there 3 weeks, and I couldn't afford my apartment anymore. I ran out of all that I saved, spent it all. It took 2 years, but I spent everything I had. And then I ended up on the streets, and there was no place to stay in Wausau. There's nowhere to go, one little shelter. So I thought I'd come here to Madison because I heard there was more work.
So you took a bus?
Yeah, I got a Catholic Charity gave me a bus ticket, and away I went.
So they are just giving people bus tickets to go to different places?
Yeah, well,
What do you think the expectation is?
Well, I think their theory is that they've dealt with you enough, they'd rather send you someplace else and let somebody else deal with you. I think that's what it's coming down to. Because I feel it here, too. I mean, they'd rather get... I think the... Not the governor, because he really has nothing to do with the homeless here, but the mayor here in town, he just likes to pack us all up and move us someplace else. And he don't care how he does it. If he could hand out everybody a bus ticket and get you to leave, he'd be happier than that. Hmm. I don't want to deal with this problem. Make it somebody else's problem.
So what are you up to in Madison, then?
Unfortunately, I read a lot and spend a lot of time in a square, talk to a lot of people, because my theory is this: if you talk, more people you talk to, you get more information, and sometimes that information will help you find a job or a place to live, you know, or even a meal.
You have been able to find some work, though, right?
Yeah, I've done a little here and there. I mean, I do a little work at the Coliseum, I think that's what it's called, football stadium here in town. But it pays $8.75 an hour, and you only work like 4, maybe 5 hours a week. It's not going to get you nowhere, but it puts... Little money in your pocket. Four hours a week? Yeah, if you're lucky, if they call you. And I've had great interviews. It's just nothing's... They're just... You go to a job interview nowadays, and I'm 50 years old. And when I first started going to work, there'd be 10 guys waiting in line for an interview. Now you got 200 guys waiting in line. So they can pick whoever they want. If you're fat, they ain't going to pick you. If they don't like the way you look, they're not going to pick you. They can pick out the best-looking people they want. It's a terrible thing to say, but it's becoming that way.
You probably feel that having a job is something you would like to do, you're capable of doing,
Oh,
right?
Sure. I mean, having a job makes you feel good. Getting up to go to work every day, I don't care if you're working a first or second or third shift, but when you go to work and come home, you feel like you accomplished anything. I've been on the streets 2 months. I haven't accomplished a damn thing. I feel like hell.
So do you think, you know, all these people without jobs, these homeless people, they deserve jobs, right?
Yeah, you know, there's the homeless is, it's a strange thing. There's like two different classes. I mean, the way I look at it, my friends and I are like, I hate to say it, but we're like on the top of the class. And then you guys, there's certain guys, all they want to do is drink and drink and drink. And that's all they care about. They don't care about themselves. They don't care about another human being. All they want to do is drink. And we don't do that. We're trying to get out of what the problems we have. And then the three, four guys that I hang out with, we all try to help each other get up and get out. Kick each other in the butt now and then.
I see. So you guys have found each other and you work together.
Yeah. It's a strange situation because I've been all over the country and I've met a lot of great people. And these three guys I hang out with are the best friends I've ever had. And it took me 50 years to find them. I've never had friends like this before. I mean, we look out for each other. It's unbelievable.
So what do you think will happen if you guys find jobs?
I think we'll take each other with it. Yeah.
You'll share an apartment?
Yeah, whatever we need to do, but we're not going to leave anybody living on the street.
What do you think are the ways that we can start to address homelessness? What can we do to fix it?
I don't know if it's a fixable problem.
Why not?
It's always been homeless.
Well, what should be done to help you?
I don't know. I don't want to be given anything. I want to be able to earn what I've got. I mean, it's bad enough going into church for a meal, and it just bugs the shit out of me, but I have no choice. I have to eat. You know, I'd rather earn it. I know that's terrible, too. If somebody came up to me and said to me, Kelly, you want a job today? I'd say yes. I didn't care what it was. So I'm in a weird situation.
But, I mean, you know, we've had political conversations. If you kind of back up and look at the bigger picture, you know, jobs require investment. And right
True.
Now,
yeah.
Wall Street is sitting on all that investment money.
That's very true.
If they're not going to create the jobs, you know, I was talking to the guys earlier. Brian was saying the government needs to do more.
We're spending, what I've heard this morning on the radio is they're spending $2 billion a week fighting a war for what? That should be spent here. If that's, you know, if that's what you mean, you know, but the politics, they're not helping us at all. Not helping, not just me, but nobody. I don't care if you're homeless or you got a home. If you're making under $20,000 a year, you don't mean squat to this government. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. And I used to never think that way. I sure do lately, because I don't see it changing.
So I guess part of the problem is, and the solution is a political one.
Yeah, I think we need to be fighting in the streets. I never thought in my day I would ever think this way or even say it out loud, that maybe we should be doing a little more protests in the streets. Maybe we should be kicking somebody's butt here and there, because sure ain't nothing's getting done.
Well, I'd like to personally say I think you deserve a job and a home, and I support using our collective resources, our government resources, of doing something about it.
Yeah, well, that's the biggest problem, is finding those resources. I know there's some out there, but you can't find them. They're all hidden. They don't want you to be found. That's a bear.
Is there anything else you think that people should know?
Well, I'm not a killer. I'm a bald-headed man. It looks pretty scary, but I wouldn't harm a fly, you know, and none of us would.
Well, again, one more time, is there anything else? Otherwise, I would wrap up the interview.
No, I think that's pretty good. Okay. I talked enough.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I'm sure the people who are here will appreciate hearing your point of view.
Cool.
We'll learn something from it.
I hope so. This morning, I woke up feeling brand new, and I jumped up feeling my highs, yeah. And my lows, yeah. And my soul, yeah. And my goal, just to stop smoking, stop drinking. Yeah. Lately I'm thinking I got my reasons just to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. Yeah, 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 yeah. Some people try, some people try just to get by for a piece of the pie. We love to eat and get high.
Thank you for listening to Health Writers on the Air. Please visit our website at healthwriters.wordpress.com.